I'm Mark McClellan. I'm the director of the Engelberg Center for Healthcare Reform at the Brookings Institution. I am very pleased to be welcoming you in out of the snow to today's third annual Sentinel Initiative public meeting. It is really good to see so many not only familiar faces, but faces who are leaders in many different aspects of issues related to drug safety and on getting better evidence on medical products. And it's nice to see this program, which is now in its third year, establish as something like an annual tradition with so many new things to talk about every year. This is an extremely important topic, an extremely timely one, improving our ability to conduct effective and efficient surveillance of medical products, products that people are actually using, is a very important aspect of improving public health, improving decision-making, improving the quality of health care, and even avoiding unnecessary health care costs. And I hope you'll agree that after the discussion today, thanks to the collaborative spirit, the collaborative public and private spirit around this set of initiatives, we're seeing a lot of progress. It's a big and challenging topic, but it's one that, thanks to all of your efforts, we're really taking on together. As in years past, we're going to try to take stock and look forward at this meeting today. The purpose is to conduct an interactive dialogue between the FDA, the many collaborators with the FDA in implementing this new post-market surveillance, active surveillance system, and, of course, all of the stakeholder communities who care so deeply about these efforts. The specific objectives that we have today include discussing the status now and the future plans for the Sentinel Initiative, and engaging in a thoughtful and constructive discussion with all of you about that progress to date and about how to set and achieve some meaningful expectations for moving forward. And this is a pretty large conference. Even despite the weather, we filled up this room. We have an overflow room next door, which you're welcome to use. We're going to be transmitting everything from in here next door, maybe a little bit quieter. We're going to, I think, need that space. But even in a conference this size, we're looking forward to the participation from everyone here. So you all may have seen an earlier version of this agenda for our plan for today, and there is one change here from that earlier version. That one featured a keynote presentation by then FDA Principal Deputy Commissioner Josh Sharfstein. As it works out, today is Josh's first day as the Secretary of Health and Mental Hygiene for the state of Maryland, so he cannot be with us this morning, but certainly sends his regard. Now, after I'm done with these opening announcements and logistical issues, I'm going to make a few brief remarks that are going to sort of fill in some of that slot by providing a little bit more substance, framing the discussion that we're going to have during the course of the day, and it's also going to give us plenty of time for all of these very important topics. After this initial opening, the FDA Sentinel team is going to provide their perspectives on where we are now, where is the initiative today, and where it's going next. That's the FDA perspective on Sentinel today. Then we have a series of panel discussions with hopefully active participation from many of you. In session one, investigators from the FDA's pilot project, the Mini Sentinel project, will provide an update on their progress, including year one achievements and the developments of the policies and tools and infrastructures that have taken place during the first year of Mini Sentinel, and then their plans for the year looking ahead. Again, we're going to have plenty of time for questions and comments on these presentations. And we'll move on to session two, in which panelists from a number of stakeholder groups are going to share their perspectives, their thoughts on Sentinel's progress to date, future directions, key issues to watch for, and suggestions for how to address coming challenges. And again, a lot of time for discussion of these perspectives with all of you who are here today. And then in session three, we're going to hear from a panel of senior leaders at HHS and two large health plans about other federal initiatives that also utilize electronic health information for evidence development that are facing some of the same technical challenges and have some not unrelated goals in terms of helping to support better decision-making by doctors and patients. These include initiatives for measuring quality of care, initiatives related to comparative effectiveness research, And they all, because of the similar kinds of challenges they face, both from an infrastructure standpoint, method standpoint, all the other policy issues involved, there may be some potential applicability of the lessons from Sentinel, the infrastructure from Sentinel even, to support these kinds of purposes, or reinforce all of these public health and quality improvement goals. So that's the outline for the sessions for today. And again, this is a large meeting, but we're going to run this with a significant role for active participation from all of you. I'd like you to keep that in mind. That brings me to a few housekeeping comments for today. One is that this is an open and public meeting as part of FDA's commitment to an extensive and transparent process for implementing the Sentinel Initiative. Press have been invited here today. The workshop is being recorded, so everything said here is going to be on the record. The presentation materials from this meeting will be posted on the Brookings website and on the Sentinel Initiative website within the next few days. They'll be available to everyone, even those who couldn't make it. For those of you who are panelists today, I'd like to make sure you know Michelle Wong. There's Michelle right there in the front row. She's very nice. But it's also her job to make sure that we have plenty of time for discussion during these sessions. So she will have a signal for you, have a note, when you're approaching the end of your allotted time. And we'd like to try to keep to that as best we can. Remember that with all this time for discussion, there'll be a lot of time for more details to come out in the discussion part of these sessions. The opening comments that you're going to hear from all of our panelists are really just meant to set the process going and get some key ideas on the table. I want to focus on that discussion, that back and forth part of the meeting. Panelists, also be mindful of turning on your microphone before speaking. I think there's some switches on these, and hopefully those will all work smoothly during the day. Also, throughout the day, there are going to be many opportunities to ask questions, as hopefully I've made clear from this overview. If you have a question or comment, please wait until we get to that part of each session, and we'd like to move through these as efficiently and constructively as we can. So when you get the microphone, please identify who you are, and please try to keep the question and comment as concise as you can. I know a lot of you have important and significant and meaningful views about how some of these Sentinel issues should be addressed, and we certainly want to air those as well, but we are going to try to do this in a way that respects the limited amount of time and large number of people that we have here today and the large number of issues that we want to discuss as effectively as possible. Also, if you are in the overflow room and you want to participate in the Q&A part, there is a dedicated microphone, or there will be, in the back of this room for everyone to use. So just because you're in the other room doesn't mean you should not plan on participating if you've got a comment or question to include. So that's where we are in terms of the meeting for today. Let me pause there, make sure I didn't miss anything about logistics. Okay, we're all good. And I just say again, thanks to everyone for coming. This is not the ideal Washington weather. It's probably not ideal weather from where you all were coming from as well. And we have people here who actually made it out of Atlanta. It's very impressive to get to this meeting. Really appreciate all the participation. This is the kind, it's been a tough week in a lot of ways for many people in the country, and this is the kind of public-private collaboration that I think really gives me a strong sense that we can accomplish a lot together. And so I really appreciate everyone being here and contributing to try to move forward on these critical issues. All right, so now, instead of a keynote address, you're going to get to a little bit of a brief overview from me of some of the topics that are going to come up during the course of the day, some of the progress that's been made, some of the issues that we're dealing with, and with a group as diverse as this, with some people who have really been devoting their lives to active post-market surveillance issues over the last few years, ranging to people who have lots of interest in healthcare policy but haven't been as focused, haven't had time to be as focused on Sentinel and this particular set of projects, and to try and provide a bit of an overview and update that hopefully provides a little bit of something for everyone. And I think my staff overstated this a little bit by calling it a keynote address, but it is going to provide some context for the course of the day and hopefully help get us off on all the key issues that we're going to try to address today. And that is towards this goal of better post-market evidence for medical product safety and the key role of this set of initiatives in our nation's broader public health and healthcare improvement objectives. This is a little bit of a complicated chart, but I think it highlights just how much has been going on since the legislation creating FDA's new initiative related to Sentinel, FDA's new post-market activities began as part of the 2007 Food and Drug Administration Amendments Act. That act mandated that FDA develop a system to enhance their ability to monitor the safety of medical products once they're on the market. And it was envisioned to be something that would complement FDA's existing systems, spontaneous adverse event reporting, phase four studies of the more traditional type, not to replace it, but to provide a more comprehensive set of tools and hopefully work synergistically with some of these other resources that were available. As you can see from the slide, there have been a series of steps to lay the groundwork for the Sentinel system over the 3 years since that law was passed. And what you're going to hear about in more detail today is how these things, how these components of Sentinel implementation have moved forward, and I think very importantly, how much they represent a real collaboration between the public and private sectors. In fact, one of the first things that was really launched after the FDA Amendments Act was passed was a privately led effort, the Observational Medical Outcomes Partnership, which had participation by FDA, a range of independent experts, and has focused on a number of the technical challenges, statistical challenges, data aggregation challenges, and the like that underlie the implementation of a program like Sentinel. This is not straightforward work. The data systems involved are diverse. While large numbers of patients, large numbers of users of medical products, and large potential control populations can be included. They are typically in observational settings and sometimes without consistent and as complete information on clinical details as one would like. They raise a number of technical issues from the data standpoint, the aggregation standpoint, statistical method standpoint, and OMOP has taken a number of steps to try to identify and then really take on those technical challenges, provide some technical insights about how these efforts can best move forward. Many of you here today may have participated in OMOP's annual meeting over the last couple of days where a lot of these issues were discussed, and again, a lot of progress has been clear, has clearly had an impact on some of the other steps on this timeline, and OMOP has continued its effort throughout this 3 year period. In the course of implementing the Sentinel system, FDA contracted to develop Mini-Sentinel. That's a pilot program that will inform the development of the Sentinel system. That contract was developed over 2008, 2009. There were some pilot contracts awarded as kind of a prelude to that, and then the Mini-Sentinel contract was awarded in 2009. It's a partnership between the FDA, Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare, and a range of other institutions, including HealthCore, the Kaiser Foundation Research Institute, Humana, Rutgers, Vanderbilt, University of Pennsylvania, University of Iowa, Harvard Medical School, many others. I could go on. So a very broad-based effort to help with implementing some initial pilot versions of Sentinel activities. And along the way, obviously, there have been a lot of other activities and opportunities for input and for trying to develop the key ideas underlying the Sentinel program. Opportunities include some of the forums that we've been involved with. I'll say more about those in a minute. A series of other public workshops and FDA-led stakeholder meetings. A lot of efforts to try to bring forward ideas, because again, there's really no way to implement this program without public-private collaboration. Now, those stakeholder meetings and these early workshops and these early pilot steps identified a whole host of issues and challenges that would need to be addressed to develop a more effective and confident capacity for meaningful active post-market surveillance. And as I said, they also highlighted the value of a transparent, collaborative process involving a broad range of stakeholders to help bring this effort together, providing not only comments and ideas, but from many of these stakeholders, active involvement and leadership. This isn't a project that is or can be conducted by the FDA. It's required real technical input, hands-on sweat equity from many of the stakeholders, many private sector participants in this effort to solve the challenges. We at the Engelberg Center are trying to help support this kind of participation and reinforce this process. As I showed you on the previous slide, we convened a number of meetings and workshops to discuss particular issues, to look for practical solutions and discuss and debate those kinds of solutions for developing better post-market evidence. And I think these ongoing efforts, ours and those sponsored by others, are an important mechanism for developing the ideas on post-market surveillance. It's also included a lot of opportunities for experts from outside of MiniSentinel, as well as patient and consumer advocates, representatives from industry, healthcare professionals, others to participate in this process. So among these different activities that have been involved are roundtable webinars. These are still ongoing. Would encourage those of you who haven't participated. It's a good way to hear about some of the many activities taking place around the country. Again, many of which are outside of MiniSentinel and outside of sort of directly FDA-sponsored efforts, but that are still relevant to this whole set of issues related to post-market safety and better evidence on medical products. These webinars are open to the public. We have more coming up soon, and we'd be delighted to have additional participants. In addition, there have been a number of expert workshops. These are typically very technical discussions of particular near-term challenges for active surveillance implementation. Some of these have included things like technical methods for implementing a network infrastructure. This workshop explored the feasibility and requirements for using a distributed data network for active surveillance. I'll talk more about that in a minute. The tools that are required, the issues that may influence data and analytic partner participation. Remember, with this being a partnership, one with active work really required by the participants, the data holders in the effort, need a process to make sure that works for everyone and it's sustainable. So those network infrastructure issues have been very important early on. Legal issues, these are extremely important. Issues like protecting patient privacy and confidentiality, issues like addressing potential liability issues that may arise in the course of evidence development, which is at least in process, not always complete, not always definitive, but can still raise liability issues. So those are very important to address. Clearly, methods themselves for working up potential signals, for identifying them, for strengthening them, for reaching more definitive conclusions, an area where OMOP has also been very active. And then finally, another critical topic is how, when, and to whom to communicate findings from active surveillance. Again, since the answers aren't always completely clean, arriving on one specific date with major insights that never were there before. It's much more of an ongoing and incremental process in many cases. So lots of activities related to expert workshops. Implementation meetings. These involve convening groups of senior leaders from both the public and private sectors to explore upcoming issues related to implementation, kind of looking a year or two ahead at what needs to be addressed and trying to discuss it, plan for it, make sure all the key implementation challenges and ways to address them get on the table. Some of the previous meetings here have included discussions of different organization models for the Sentinel systems, as well as ways to ensure meaningful participation from data and analytic partners. And then finally, and very importantly for today, our annual public workshop. So while there's a lot going on, obviously, with FDA, Mini-Sentinel, other Brookings activities, other organizations, there's a lot of websites that provide regular information about Sentinel status. This annual meeting is intended to try to bring all of that together for people who may not have time to focus on this all the time or may be focusing on specific issues but want to take a step back, think about the big picture of where things are and where they're headed. This annual meeting is intended to provide an opportunity not only to sort of step back and think about where Sentinel is and where it's going overall, but to provide an opportunity for a broad base of direct feedback on Sentinel's direction to the FDA, to the Mini-Sentinel investigators, to everyone who is involved in this very important and very challenging effort. We've got more information available on all of these issues on our website, and again, I would really encourage those of you who want to do more, get involved more with Sentinel activities, and or at least be up to date on what's going on with them to think about ongoing participation in some of these other activities. Thanks to the contribution of a lot of people in this room, as we'll hear about today, there's been a good deal of progress towards achieving the goals of the Sentinel Initiative. And in fact, in conjunction with this meeting this morning, and this kind of timing never works out, but we're very pleased that the New England Journal of Medicine has published a perspective from FDA and Brookings and the Mini-Sentinel team outlining the structure and function of Mini-Sentinel. It's kind of a good complement to the updates that you're going to be getting at this meeting today. The article is available on the New England Journal website starting this morning, and we're going to try to make copies available to all of you who are interested in getting one before lunch. In this perspective, we talk about the process that was used to create Mini-Sentinel's distributed system, which is now operational and capable of querying potential safety signals on over 60 million patient lives, 60 million. It describes Mini-Sentinel's ongoing and future priorities. It emphasizes the importance of stakeholder engagement, as we've talked about already, for really providing not only the ideas and the pathway to effectiveness, but really the momentum for this kind of public-private initiative to continue and succeed. And then it also highlights Sentinel's potential as a key foundation in a much more effective learning healthcare system. And it's a distributed system. There's not like one database somewhere, but it's quite a remarkable resource for gathering evidence, for learning more from the practice of medicine, from the practice of healthcare in this country. So Mini-Sentinel is definitely a work in progress, but as the article highlights, as all the work that you all have contributed to over the last several years makes clear, there has been a lot of progress and some key features are now clear. And that's what I want to talk about now. Again, we're going to discuss a lot of that in more detail during the course of the day. But in terms of some of these key features, first, the framework for Sentinel is clearly a distributed database network. That means there's not some central warehouse or data repository somewhere where everyone's information, increasingly complex information, gets dumped and held. Instead, the underlying data used in the project stay with the data owners, the people who are actually using these data for the delivery of healthcare, the payment of healthcare for actual healthcare activities in some way. So the basic idea here is if there's an interest in a particular safety-related question, and it's an oversimplified version, the basic idea is to try to find among all these data partners a common way of defining, say, a numerator and denominator of all of the individuals who might have been exposed to the the medical product, and a numerator out of those that had some kind of significant adverse event. And the basic idea of a distributed network is if everybody does that the same on each of their own data, then the summary information coming out of that, the numerator and denominator, can be combined. That's a lot more complicated than that in practice, but that's the idea. Distributed data stays out in the cloud or in its own homes, wherever the data are, and it's only brought together in the summary fashion to answer the relevant questions for safety and effectiveness. And, of course, going along with that, to confirm the cases, to take further steps, there has to be a capacity to sort of trace back to the original data holders and the original data itself to confirm cases and things like that. So you can think about this as sort of bringing the policy question or the safety question to each data source rather than taking each of the data sources and bringing it to the question. There's some clear advantages of a distributed network. These are the reasons why things are evolving the way they are. Each of the partners in this analysis maintain control of their own data because they're close to it. They can help make sure that their own data aren't being misinterpreted. This also helps with important privacy protection, since the individual data are staying where it's being used for patient care already. This does create some challenges, too. There is real work needed by analysts at each of these data sources, real involvement on an ongoing basis. That's why I've been emphasizing partnership and the need to create momentum and a sustainable infrastructure for all of these participants to continue to participate actively. It does require some real work on their part. And there needs to be a process to get agreement on consistent methods that can be applied across all these sites to get to meaningful results with this system, and also the limitations of those methods need to be commonly understood by the whole environment, by the whole set of participants. In this approach, it is critical to collaborate effectively with a wide range of stakeholders: health plans, integrated data systems, healthcare providers with electronic records or supplemental information that's needed for investigating a safety question. They are all analytic partners. They're not just data providers in some warehouse. It's an analytic partnership, a distributed analytic partnership. Now, this has led to a number of issues, a number of challenges, real hard technical problems for implementation, which are being addressed, but which are certainly not fully resolved and are still part of the ongoing Sentinel implementation effort. Some of the issues that FDA and its collaborators on active surveillance are still working on include developing a generalizable framework for refining safety signals. What does this science of active surveillance really look like? Developing established protocols for answering common safety questions. You know, with this distributed network, the more there can be common, well-understood, validated, accepted procedures, the smoother this whole process will go in terms of addressing each application, each safety question in an efficient and timely way. Having a mechanism for continuing to solicit input from experts and the public to continue to improve the rigor, the credibility of the methods and results. OMOP's been doing a lot of work here in supporting the technical side of things, as well as many of the investigators inside and outside of the Mini Sentinel project. But without question, there are many technical and statistical issues that still need further work, and we'll talk about some of those today, too. And then, very importantly, developing strategies to educate healthcare professionals on how to interpret and to apply the information from active surveillance, along with all the other sources of evidence that they need to keep track of and keep up to date on, so they can in turn help patients make informed decisions about their care, and similarly, I should say, education for patients and the consumers about what all this evidence means for them and how they should interpret it, steps and reports that come out of the active surveillance system, which, again, are not always going to be completely definitive. All of a sudden, you know, we didn't know anything, now we know everything about a safety question. That's not the way this ongoing active surveillance system is likely to work. So a lot of those issues are things that we're going to cover today because they are ongoing challenges, ongoing areas that active surveillance needs to address. It's obvious in all of this that continued engagement with the wide range of stakeholders that care deeply about these efforts is going to be essential to the overall program's success. Stakeholders like the people that you're going to be hearing from today have an important role to play in providing guidance and insights in helping to set realistic expectations for patients, the public, for lawmakers about what Sentinel can and cannot do. There are also significant implications for medical product developers who have a major interest in better evidence related to the safety and effectiveness of their products. Healthcare professionals have a huge role in interpreting this evidence, as I just described. And finally, patients and consumers need to be involved throughout the process to help set priorities, to help ensure that health information is used effectively and appropriately, and to ensure that the activities and results of active surveillance are communicated effectively. The Sentinel Initiative is developing at the same time as many other steps are taking place that are intended to provide better evidence for decision-making. Recent legislation, many private sector initiatives are exploring and expanding the development and use of electronic health information to answer more a broader range of important healthcare questions, to provide a stronger evidence base and stronger decision-making support for doctors and patients, health professionals, and others in our healthcare system. There are a number of issues that arise when health information is used for purposes like this, purposes other than direct patient care. These secondary uses of health information are potentially important, but they raise a number of also important policy issues, and those are still very much being explored now and going to be over the next couple of years. You know, I know what gets all the press these days is the healthcare reform legislation in terms of expansions of coverage and new subsidies and so forth. But this is also a critical time for evidence as we're moving to a system that really has potentially much richer data, but with data that presents a lot of questions about privacy, about appropriate use and appropriate methods for using it, about bringing that information to bear more effectively for better decision making. It's a critical period for evidence in our healthcare system as well. And the Sentinel system is really a unique part of that because it is so extensively developed already, thanks to the efforts of everyone here. Again, 60 million participating in Mini Sentinel, large efforts using public sector data as well. So potentially an important foundation for how these kinds of policy issues can be resolved in other settings related to better evidence in our healthcare setting as well. All the work on data infrastructure, privacy and security concerns, development of appropriate analytic methods, participation of data partners, analytic partners on a sustainable basis, all these issues that Sentinel is dealing with, I think, have important implications for these broader challenges facing our healthcare system. And, of course, the big issues that still need to be solved go to those other areas as well. And for things like effectiveness research, quality measurement and reporting, creating a sustainable mechanism for participation by data and analytic partners, developing active public-private partnerships that are governed effectively, extending our capacity to appropriately link and analyze different data sources while protecting patient privacy, ensuring all stakeholders have meaningful roles in these activities. There are challenges for Sentinel. There are challenges for the rest of these other key activities in our healthcare systems. So, that's why today is so important. Not that we're going to solve all these problems, but you have the opportunity here today to participate in right now what I think is one of the most important set of initiatives related to these core issues for the future well-being of our healthcare system and for the future health of Americans. So today is a very important part of this process of moving towards better evidence, more personalized evidence on safety as part of moving towards a much more effective, efficient, evidence-based healthcare system. And I want to thank you all for joining us to participate in that effort. Now, that brings me to the end of my opening and framing remarks. We're not going to have questions and discussions of this because what we really want to focus on is the panel presentations where all these issues, and I'm sure many more, are going to be discussed, I think, much more extensively and eloquently than I've been able to do in these short opening remarks. So I'd like to move right on to that right now with our first set of remarks on Sentinel today from the FDA perspective. So we're going to hear a few words from some of the leaders at FDA on this effort. That includes Rachel Berman, the director of the Office of Medical Policy, at the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research, and Judy Rakusin, the Sentinel Initiative Scientific Lead in the Office of Medical Policy, the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research. Rachel, Judy, come on up, and let's get started with your perspectives. Thank you.
I'm shorter than Mark. Good morning. Welcome. Mark's covered pretty much everything, so I could just say ditto or choose to emphasize a few points. So I will choose to emphasize a few points. First of all, on behalf of the agency, I would like to add our welcome and thanks to everyone who has, for the past 3 years, been marching along beside us. So certainly patients and consumers and their leadership represented here today, our data partners, without whom there would be no initiative, our colleagues from OMOP, our colleagues from Regulated Industry, our colleagues from Boston, from Harvard, and I just as an aside, I'd like to say that when we think about causal relationships, ever since we started working with them, there's been a substantial increase in the amount of snow in Washington. So is that right? Is that a signal we should pursue or not? And if so, how what are the methods that would help us determine whether or not it's correct? And obviously our colleagues from Brookings, without whom we really would not be where we are today. I mean, Mark put up that timeline, and what was not shown far to the right before the official relationship with Brookings was the invaluable assistance Mark and his colleagues provided to us right from the beginning. I guess it helps to be an ex FDA commissioner as well as have a broad perspective on healthcare. So we stand here 3 years later at our annual meeting, much farther along than I would have expected. And I'm delighted to say that. I think that thinking back in, at least in my years of federal service, which at this point are amazingly 20, the only other time I saw this kind of really rapid progress, which was accomplished only through collaboration, something Mark has emphasized repeatedly and appropriately so, was the early days of HIV drug development. Now there was an obvious or what people perceived as an obvious tangible threat, a virus, a deadly virus, and everyone could coalesce or collaborate around that threat. Here the threat, and I think it's quite real and in a way much more impactful, is much harder to articulate. It's the, I don't want to say crumbling of, or would it be fair to say crumbling of our health care infrastructure and our ability to deliver care, our ability to afford to deliver care in the way we as a country want to and should. That's a real threat, but it's much less dramatic than a virus. And yet, from the beginning, we have had, we the agency, the Food and Drug Administration, have had absolutely no trouble engaging the communities that need to be engaged and want to be engaged in helping us move this forward. And Mark, there are two points with which I want to quibble. One was you said no way to implement without a public-private partnership. But 3 years ago, that was absolutely on the table as a question with a big question mark. And I think we have proven. So the first thing, and harkening back to Mark's comments about it's been a tough week and when we see forward progress like this, it makes us very hopeful. We can't fix the entire world. We can fix a piece of it. I think we have proven in this collaboration, I'll talk a little bit about the specifics, we've shown that the federal government has a better way to function, that had we gone it alone and done it in silo, and there were the advocates for that, we would not be where we are today. Instead, we are far ahead of where we could have imagined being and have a much richer, more productive, and more effective program through collaboration. So, Mark, I think the answer is yes. We now know there's no way to implement it without a public-private partnership, but I think that was in question 3 years ago, and we've answered that question. And that, we hope, as we'll talk today, can dramatically influence the way other parts of the government, the agency, but other parts of the government think about moving forward on related efforts. The other piece I wanted to quibble about was the distributed model. That, and again, a serious question 3 years ago. Absolutely on the table. Now it seems, as my children would say, like a no-brainer. So the things that seemed insurmountable, problems that seemed insurmountable 3 years ago, I'm looking at Kristen and I'm thinking about some of the privacy issues where we just were all holding our heads in our hands. We've gotten way past the discussion of, oh my goodness, the data can never, ever, ever move, to how do we protect it? How do we protect the patient and the consumer? But how do we maximally protect them by making sure their information is being used optimally? And thinking creatively about what is involved with that. So our discussions become far more sophisticated and far more productive. So that talks about the partnership that we have, one thing we have accomplished, because this is, I think, the first meeting where we're actually talking about tangible deliverables and accomplishments. The first meeting was, if you will, a meet and greet. The second meeting was a little bit more priority setting. I see Jenna Marchibretta nodding her head. Yes. This meeting is the first time we're actually presenting results. Now, that doesn't mean we're going to tell you drug A causes B, although I do think working with Rich does cause snow in Washington, but that's my opinion. And therefore, I think the Harvard crew should come and shovel my driveway when we really get dumped on. I think we've answered the partnership collaboration question. How to fully operationalize that is a work in progress, as was proven last night, as we passed my personal bedtime, but we were still struggling with some slides because one thing we learned was that we're very used to working with regulated industry, and we have a language. And systems in place. Now we've gone to a different community, the academic community, in a different way. In other words, we're not reviewing your INDs and your NDAs as we usually do. We're very, very different. We've learned how to learn to develop a language and methods and so forth. And what is obviously sensitive to us is not obviously sensitive to a different community and vice versa. And we're having to learn to be very sensitive to those issues because those become stumbling blocks and ultimately could become deal breakers if we don't fully understand the priorities of each sector and make sure that they're articulated and addressed. Not everyone gets everything they want. We all have to lose some of our, if you will, autonomy, but at least we have to think it through, make a conscious decision, make sure it's on the table, and then move forward. Otherwise, if we don't understand what brings people to the table and what drives them away, we no longer have a collaboration. And in that sense, Mini Sentinel and Sentinel in general is a very good worked example of the kinds of things that we need to work through as we move forward. And I'll talk in a minute about where we're headed, but I do want to spend a couple of minutes on communications. Mark touched on communications in one way, which is, and we thought and talked a lot about this, how do we get this kind of data out there in such a way that makes sense, that's not misleading, that's constructive. In other words, again, saying that because we're working with Harvard, we're getting snow. If it were on a more serious subject, that could be very destructive. We'd say, okay, fine, we won't work with Harvard anymore, and we'll solve the snow problem. But when you talk about a drug and misinformation or partial information or confusing information kind of filtering out, that's a serious problem for us. Now, we, FDA, have maintained and are convinced we not that we're such experts at communication, but this is not a different problem for us than we have every single day. But working in this environment is very different, and that point was driven home by the press reports this week about the saxagliptin study. And you'll hear a lot more about that as a methodology in a little while. And I'm not going to be talking about methodology other than to emphasize that the methodology is in its infancy. We really don't know how to do this. So we have to learn as we go. But we chose the SACSI study very, very carefully. Judy Rakusin, who's our scientific lead, in collaboration with the center, put together a list of candidates. We went through them. But one crucial point that was missed is what was absolutely critical is that, as Judy's like to say, what's the plan? The plan was that there's an ongoing randomized controlled trial. So we have a plan. We have a safety net. If we don't understand the information we get, we will have other information, such as if we wanted to go back to my snow example, we could look at the Farmer's Almanac. We could really figure out if indeed there is more snow. So the press reports that I don't know, just said we chose Sachse because it was diabetes, chose Sachse because MI, chose Sachse because we thought it would make Congress happy, chose Sachse because we wanted to pick on those particular companies, whatever. They weren't quite right, and we have to figure out how to operate in this, and this is a collaborative environment. Our thinking will not always be that clear, but at the end of the day, because MiniSentinel is a contract from the federal government and from the Food and Drug Administration, we will make certain decisions, and we will make those decisions as transparent as we possibly can, but there will be times when we won't be able to be completely transparent, and that is the truth. The next point I want to make, and it's similar to that one, is it talks about managing expectations. And Mark touched on this as well. Sentinel, it's not in its infancy anymore. I think we're really all the way to toddlerhood, but we are learning how to do it. And we have to somehow make sure we always communicate that as we now do talk about results, and as we do talk about developing methodologies, we're very clear about what the limitations are, what we can and can't do, keeping our eye on the future, knowing we're building towards the future, building towards this national resource, but we're going to have concrete deliverables all along the way, and what they mean and how impactful they are, we have to frame very, very carefully, and that's clearly where we need the help of the community, the people who really understand what's going on, and both the strengths and the limitations. I think the last point that is really tricky is how do we get from here to where we want to be? And that's the answer we don't have. Just as 3 years ago, I could not envision being where we are today, and I wouldn't have been able to describe exactly what we already have. How we go from here to the national resource we want to have, that we need to have, that has a sustainable business model, that has a shared infrastructure, that meets the needs not only of the Food and Drug Administration, and that obviously is going to be our first priority, but understanding that we not in any way want to encourage duplicative activities. As we said in the paper, there are healthcare information, it's a precious national resource. We don't want to waste it, and we certainly don't want to waste the resources that are involved in understanding and analyzing and so forth. We not only are short of financial resources, we operate on a very small budget. We are very short of experts who know how to do this. And as a nation, we haven't yet quite figured out how to rev up training those experts, so we cannot afford to be running parallel systems. So how we engage and make sure that the federal government is on the same page, that all the various activities are on the same page, that we're not querying the data partners for the same information in six slightly different ways, how we get from here to there, how we influence the national dialogue, is not entirely clear, but it is definitely through for such as these. So Judy's going to spend substantially more time, obviously, than I have on the specifics of what we've accomplished and where we're going, and Rich will follow with more detail. But I think we can sit back today and not rest on our laurels. We have an enormous amount of work ahead of us. But I think be very satisfied and, in fact, amazed that we have succeeded in developing a diverse, transparent, and accountable collaboration, which I believe is precedent-setting, and I think others who've had federal experience can think about that. It took us a lot further and did it a lot faster than we'd have thought. As I said, without an obvious, tangible threat such as a virus, and that meetings such as these and the various other activities have been outlined by Mark in terms of having Brookings help march us along, we have to be vigilant to anything that can derail us. We have to be willing to course correct whenever we need to, and remembering that at the end of the day, we are all here for the same reason, which is to better the health of this country, of the people in this country, and that we are inventing, as we go, a much more modern approach to doing that, although it will still be only one tool in our toolbox, just like saying that working with Harvard and Snow proves Snow. Sentinel, there will never be alone Sentinel finding, but it should help us very much modernize how we think about our therapies. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'm going to give you a little bit more detail about the activities that are comprising the Sentinel Initiative. Here we are 2.5 years into the official program. I'll talk a little bit about the background and why we're here in the first place. Talks in a little bit more detail about the pilot programs that you've already heard mentioned that have been underway for about a year and a half. To help us actually pilot how we might conduct active safety medical product safety surveillance. I'll revisit our convener activities on active medical product surveillance that you've heard described, but put a little bit of FDA input into that, and then wrap up by talking about the public-private partnership, OMOP, or Observational Medical Outcomes Partnership, you've heard a little bit about today also. So just revisiting the FDA Amendments Act of 2007 for a moment, Section 905 talks about active post-market risk identification and analysis. And specifically, it says that FDA should establish a post-market risk identification and analysis system to link and analyze safety data from multiple sources. And it laid out specific goals for the number of patients that should be included in such a system. And that was 25 million people by last July and 100 million people by next July, or a year from this July. And there's a little check mark next to the 25 million because in July of last year, we did meet and exceed that goal through the mini-Sentinel distributed database, which you'll hear a little bit more about later. Another component of Section 905 specifically said that FDA should be utilizing data from a variety of sources, including both federal health sources and private sector sources. And so two more check marks there as we have included our federal partners in our federal partner collaboration, which I'll be speaking more about, as well as the private sector in the mini-Sentinel project. Now, in response to the FDA Amendments Act mandate to create this system for post-market risk identification and analysis, FDA launched the Sentinel Initiative in May of 2008. And the goals of that program are listed on this slide. Specifically, one of the goals is to improve our capability to identify and evaluate safety issues in near real time. So for those of you familiar with FDA, we have had for many years spontaneous reporting systems that can capture reports that are either submitted to manufacturers who are then required to report them to FDA, or the FDA can accept reports directly from healthcare providers and patients. But these passive systems require FDA to await those reports coming in, and that can be a lengthy process as people experience potential problems, have to think about reporting them, report them to their practitioners, et cetera. And so we need a way of learning about safety issues more quickly, identifying them, and evaluating them. So that's one goal of this active surveillance system. The other is to enhance FDA's ability to evaluate safety issues that are not easily evaluated through the spontaneous reporting system. So these are improving our access to special populations like the children and the elderly, expanding FDA's access to longer-term data, which in some regard will likely require us to be able to link between databases in an anonymous way. And finally, expanding FDA's capability to look at adverse events that occur commonly in the population. The spontaneous reporting systems do quite well with rare, uncommon events that are often considered to be related to particular medical products. It's much harder to understand common adverse events like MI and fracture because generally they're not even reported to the database, and even if they are, we don't quite know what to do with them because they occur commonly in the background. But by creating a system that has a defined denominator and has comparator groups, we can improve our capability of looking at these common events. And so I just want to reinforce that the active surveillance system that we're developing is intended to augment and not to replace the systems that we currently have in place. So moving on to the pilot programs, I'm just going to briefly highlight Mini-Sentinel because you're going to be hearing a lot more about it. But specifically, this is the pilot that we have intended to develop the scientific operations needed for the Sentinel system and to create a coordinating system that has a capability of having access to relationships with data partners to create a distributed system for us to pilot the evaluation of safety issues that are coming up from a variety of centers and from pre-market development, things that are occurring in the post-market period. And this gives us an opportunity to evaluate how we might evaluate these safety issues in this kind of distributed system, and we can come to understand what are the barriers, what are the challenges, and to really work on evolving the data infrastructures and the scientific methodologies that are needed to do this. The Federal Partners Collaboration is our small distributed system with our federal partners, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the VA Health System, and the Department of Defense. We are doing this project through interagency agreements. And the difference in this small distributed system is that we are not utilizing a common data model, and I'm not sure that phrase has been used today yet, but you'll be hearing more about it. One of the approaches with a distributed system is that in order to run an analysis similarly across all of the data partners, each of the data partners transforms their data into a standardized format so that one analytic program can be run. And that's the model that's being used in Mini-Sentinel, and that's the model that's being used in OMOP as well. With our federal partners, that is not part of the program. However, our approach has been to develop a common protocol, develop standard definitions for our exposures and outcomes, as well as developing a common approach to the analytic methods, and then for each of the data partner, each of the federal partners to implement the protocol in their data setting. And this gives us an opportunity to understand how do we interpret data from these safety evaluations when we are not using a common data model, recognizing that we're trying, as part of the Sentinel Initiative and trying to understand a range of approaches to doing things, what are the challenges when you do one of these active surveillance evaluations without a common data model versus when you use a common data model, which we're learning about from Mini-Sentinel and OMOP. So that's the approach that we're using with our federal partners, and it's been a very productive collaboration, particularly because our federal partners take care of their patient populations. They have specific safety questions that are important to them, that are important to FDA, and we can collaborate to better understand that and improve the care all around. As you've heard today already, the Brookings Institution is leading our activities, our convener activities on active medical product surveillance, and this has really been an invaluable collaboration. It has allowed FDA to access experts in the areas that are important to helping us develop an active surveillance system. And the various topics of expert panels, the active, the medical product surveillance roundtables, some of them are listed on the slide, but it really has allowed us to access the expertise that we need, as well as hearing about the latest projects that are going on in various the fine aspects of how do we do this. So how do we think about linking data anonymously? What has been the experience of other projects that have tried to do active surveillance in their own settings in a state-based way, in other federal initiatives related to H1N1? What did that experience? What were the lessons learned there that we can apply to Sentinel? So this whole effort has been really tremendously helpful in gathering all of the expertise, because as you've heard today, we've gotten where we're going, or where we are today and where we're headed, because of all of this collaboration and with all of the various smaller advances that groups are making. We can learn about them and in the active surveillance implementation meetings try to bring all of those bits of information together to think about how ultimately will we stand up the Sentinel system. And finally, the public workshops like the one today, we really are tremendously appreciative to Brookings for helping us bring everyone together for these important discussions. I'm going to finish by mentioning the Observational Medical Outcomes Partnership. Mark described this earlier. I just want to revisit it for a moment. It's a public-private partnership between the pharmaceutical industry, FDA, and the Foundation for the NIH. And it's really been it's a research effort focused on developing methods for use in observational data for active surveillance. The goals have been to conduct this methodologic research, as well as developing open source tools and capabilities, and really establishing a community around research in this area. As Rachel mentioned, we are in need of more people moving into the area of methods development and conduct of active surveillance, and a project like OMOP is important in creating this research community to move this forward. If there are graduate students out there in the crowd, come work with us because we can use your help. I'd encourage you to go to the website because a tremendous amount of materials that OMOP has developed in the area of methods development and data characterization tools are there, as well as a description of the common data model and the other work that's been done. As was mentioned yesterday, was the OMOP symposium, where the results of the main OMOP methods experiment that were conducted through the first 2 years of the project were presented. And clearly, tremendous progress has been made in beginning to understand the methods landscape, but there's a lot more work to be done, and fortunately, OMOP will be continuing for another year. So I think you've probably gotten the sense that this is a long-term complex initiative, and we are implementing it in stages as the scientific methodologies and the data infrastructure evolves. It's of utmost importance to us to maintain the privacy and security within the distributed system, and you'll hear more about the privacy panel that has been part of Mini-Sentinel that has helped develop the policies in that area. And we are here because we want to hear from all of our stakeholders so we can continue to address concerns that may come up as we move this program forward. And finally, we are really interested in trying to address how the eventual Sentinel system can function as a national resource, as has been mentioned, and really complement other federal initiatives that are using distributed systems. So we know within the HHS immediate office and within ARC, there are projects going on to use distributed systems for comparative effectiveness research and product quality initiatives, and we want to make sure that we can move this effort forward in as collaborative a way as possible, so that, as Rachel mentioned, we're not making duplicative efforts and we can use our resources together to move all of our initiatives forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Judy. Thanks, Rachel. Just to, again, orient you about the discussion from here, Rachel and Judy are going to participate in a discussion after the first panel where we're going to try to get into more depth about a range of issues around Sentinel implementation to date and some of these issues going forward. So I want to hold any sort of big substantive questions till then, but did want to check right now. Does anybody have any clarifying questions about Mini Sentinel or about anything else you've heard so far? Well, let's hold off on the substance. Just any sort of clarifying technical questions? Okay. That's going to be a pretty good discussion in a little while. So thank you all for coming up now. They will be back in a little bit after we hear from the remainder of this first panel. And I'd like to ask all of our first panelists to come up while I introduce them. This set is a group of Mini Sentinel investigators who are going to provide an update on the pilot's development and future plans. And again, we're going to have an extensive discussion here so that we weren't going too long without a break. What we're going to do is hear from all four of them and take a short break and reconvene for really an hour of discussion with Rachel and Judy as well about all of these issues related to Mini Sentinel. But right now, I'm looking forward to hearing their opening comments. And let me introduce very briefly Rich Platt, the professor and chair of the Department of Population Medicine at Harvard Medical School and Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare Institute. Rich is the PI on the contract with the FDA to develop Mini Sentinel. As I mentioned earlier, this includes a very large and diverse set of organizations. Next, Leslie Curtis is an associate professor of medicine at the Center for Clinical and Genetic Economics at Duke University School of Medicine. Next is Kristen Rosati, a partner at Cooper Smith Shermer and Brockelman PLC. Thanks for making it here today, Kristen. And also Bruce Fireman, who's a biostatistician and research scientist at the Division of Research at Kaiser Permanente in Northern California. As I'll talk about, they have been involved in Mini Sentinel to date, and we'll give you some, a good set of perspectives on where Mini Sentinel is and what's coming up. So, Rich, let me turn this over to you.
You know, being the principal investigator usually means you're the guy who gets all the complaints. And I have to say this is an extraordinary activity because I'm probably the person who is having the most fun in this activity. I tried to make a slide showing the names of the people who have been actively engaged among the 27 partner organizations involved. And it turns out that the font size is really too small to do that. But I'll say that the things that that the four of us are going to talk about involve the substantive involvement of about 150 people who are engaged in a meaningful way in creating the things that we're talking about. And that's only on the contractors' side. There's also a large number of people at FDA who have been very active participants in making this work. So there isn't time to name names, but I will say that Rachel and Judy and Melissa Robb have been as good a set of federal partners as I've encountered in what's getting to be a long career of working with federal agencies. So this is really not only an activity that is successful as it goes, but it's also one that's quite a positive experience. This is a slide that Janet Woodcock used just over a year ago in which she laid out the things that FDA was expecting of the Mini Sentinel program. There's a lot of words here, so let me boil it down to say that our marching orders were to do seven things. One, create a coordinating center. Second, to build a distributed data system. The third was to engage three or more health data environments. The fourth is to create a system of governance that would sustain this activity. The fifth was to build a secure communications facility. The sixth was to develop epidemiologic and statistical methods to the extent that they're needed to make this work, and then to evaluate topics that FDA identified for us as being important ones. So let me give you a progress report on how we're doing in a year later. We've stood up a coordinating center that has an operations center in Boston and a planning board that is distributed, has membership from all of the partner organizations and others, including a patient representative. And I'll mention particularly that a project operations committee has done yeoman work in creating policies and principles for us, and our privacy panel has provided terrific guidance for us. We organize our work according to data methods and protocol cores, and each of those has work groups that are stood up and do work on specific topics as needed. So those are sort of ad hoc organizational groups that do the real work of the mini sentinel. The governance policies that we've developed so far focus on seven areas, and I've listed them here, but I want to highlight the first three. The first was the decision by FDA to consider the work that we're doing to be part of FDA's public health practice rather than research. And it's a decision that followed a substantial amount of thought and consultation and work, and that has very important implications. Partly there are operational implications for what it takes to do work, but more importantly, I think, in really firmly establishing the kind of activities that the mini sentinels engaged in as an activity that is addressing an important public health priority rather than simply generating new knowledge. The second thing that we have spent a lot of time on is the theoretical underpinnings of the distributed data system, and that is the principle of having as little of protected health information leave its existing home as possible, and so articulating that in a way that is flexible enough so that data can move when it has to, but doesn't move when it doesn't have to, was also important work. And the third policy is the fact that everything we're doing is work that we expect to appear in the public space in a timely way. One of the surprising things about our initial interactions with FDA was the fact that not only did we not have to negotiate for the right to publish our findings, and that is sometimes an issue in the work that we do with federal agencies, but we actually had to have a conversation about whether it would be possible to hold off on making certain things public so that we could publish them in the peer review literature, and it's a first for us. Kristen will talk about the work that the privacy panel has done in thinking through and articulating principles on privacy. There's a white paper that I'm sure she'll refer to that's available on our website. This is back to 2010. We were hoping to be able to make available administrative and claims data for 60 million people. And listing the other things here, we spent all of this year working on the administrative and claims side, since we had to start somewhere, and that's the largest amount of data. In fact, Leslie will show you that we now have data on 71 million people. We think those are when Mark talks about queryable data; those are the data that are queryable for FDA. These are our distributed data partners. We were supposed to have data from three. In fact, the data, those 71 million, come from 15 organizations that are part of WellPoint, Kaiser, Humana, HMO Research Network. Aetna is joining the Mini Sentinel team. Vanderbilt will also be a data provider. There are also partners that are not data partners but bring content expertise, and I've listed them here. Mark's already showed you the distributed analysis framework that we use. I'll only point out that part of the special sauce is the Mini Sentinel portal, which uses software that that we've developed over the past several years using support from AHRQ, which has staked out the space of distributed analysis and has allowed us to make progress much more quickly than we otherwise would have. This is a team that Jeff Brown has led that's built and made operational this portal. We have secure communications facilities, a FSMA-compliant file transfer capability. We also have a public website, minisentinel.org, where most of the things that we're talking about either are now or will be available fairly soon. So I invite you to come visit the website. The kinds of things that are on it are we'll put the results of all of our completed evaluations. We have information about every one of the ongoing evaluations that has been sort of formally approved, our methods, tools, policies, procedures, protocols, computer programs will all be there. The ones that are finished enough to show are there. We've put a substantial amount of work into methods development. We're not going to be able to spend time this morning saying much about the methods development that we've been doing, but that has been both epidemiologic methods development, developing a taxonomy of study designs that might be used for different kinds of questions that FDA is interested in and different kinds of data resources that are available. We've also been doing some work in getting the best understanding we can of the existing knowledge about how to use electronic data. And we've been doing a substantial amount of work in novel statistical development to address some of the major gaps that we know we're going to have to deal with in order to make the best use of these data. So back to Janet's slide. I'd say we've done pretty well on six of the seven things that she gave us to do. So as the 2003 Red Sox would have said, it's time to cowboy up and actually do some safety evaluation. So that's the work of this coming year. Actually learn something that will be useful for clinicians and for patients. Bruce is going to describe the protocol that we will be launching fairly soon to evaluate acute myocardial infarction in relation to oral hypoglycemic agents, but we'll also be working with FDA to evaluate safety issues, new safety issues for drugs that have been on the market for a while, and to evaluate the impact of FDA's regulatory decisions on the use and health outcomes of products that are the targets of those decisions. We're also going to be working with the Center for Biologics on assessment of vaccine safety issues. The PRISM project that Judy mentioned, which was an ad hoc evaluation of H1N1 vaccine safety, is now formally part of the Mini Sentinel program, and we are delighted. Last year, I thought that our situation was like this: engaged in a good line of work and enjoying the things that came down the pike. I'd say this year we're realizing that we're really dealing with heavy machinery and there are a lot of moving parts. That doesn't look like Leslie there, but running the data core is not a job for people who don't know how to stay out of harm's way. Last year, I listed these eight challenges as being things that we needed to be mindful of. This year, I'd say it's the same eight challenges and the same two that are at the top of the list. That is, on the one hand, we appreciate that it is important to have the capacity for timely evaluation of the data that are available, because it's important to know that products are safe if they're safe, and it's important to know that they're unsafe if they are unsafe. On the other hand, we recognize the tension and the importance of avoiding false alarms that can have an enormous negative impact. And so building the infrastructure and the capability of doing these studies is an important piece of work, but the leitmotif that governs all of this is making sure that we achieve the right balance of speed and care and that we avoid saying things that are really misleading. So I've already shown you that minisentinel.org is a living, breathing website. But one day while I was thinking about something else, I typed in minisentinel.com, and you actually get someplace. And I'll just point out that I don't know who owns minisentinel.com, but you can buy it. So if you take a market-driven view of the world and ask how are we doing, I'd say a URL that you could buy for max $15 last year now appears to have a market value of $2,000, which is a return of investment that's pretty good. So, we have yet to do the most important work that MiniSentinel has to do. On the other hand, we are delighted to have made as much progress as we have, and are looking forward to continued work here. Thank you.
It's great to be here today to share with you some of the accomplishments of the Data Corps over the last year. Really, I believe over the last year, we've created a really productive and actually quite fun collaboration among different data environments, institutions, and we've built an exciting and, I think, unique resource as well. Today, what I'll do is talk about the process that we use to create the MiniSentinel Common Data Model and how we actually developed the distributed database. Also touch on the core infrastructure that's been built. Rich alluded to this a little bit just a minute ago, and then talk about how we'll be generating useful information for FDA. So a common data model, as Judy mentioned, is essentially a commonly defined data structure with specific data definitions to accompany that, so that all partners or all institutions in a distributed environment can transform their data in a similar, really identical way. In creating the MiniSentinel Common Data Model, we began by developing some kind of ground rules or guiding principles for the work that we would do. We did a careful review of existing data models, and then we went through a fairly detailed process of revising draft data specifications. Now, when I talk about laying the groundwork, really, we really did do that by creating these kind of common understandings, guiding principles that we would use throughout our work together. There are 11 guiding principles in all. I've highlighted three here that I think really are both broadly stated and I think nicely articulate the kind of underpinnings of the work that we're doing. Simply put, you could read them here, but simply put, we value the data partners and the expertise and experience that they bring to the table. We are committed to creating a distributed database and environment that is really quite efficient. And finally, we're committed to creating a distributed database that meets the needs that it's supposed to meet, but is also flexible and able to develop over time. We did a fairly thorough review of existing common data models because we didn't feel the need to reinvent the wheel, and we certainly didn't want to make mistakes that had already been made before, or we wanted to learn from everyone else. Included in that review were some of the data models that you've heard about today, PRISM, OMOP, the HMORN's Virtual Data Warehouse, the Vaccine Safety Data Link, and several others. And from that review, several kinds of lessons or themes emerged. First, we were reminded again and again that it is feasible for many data partners to assemble these patient-level files according to some common data specifications. And while doing that, they can also retain complete control over the use of their data. As you've heard already, that's really, really an important point. But while they do that, they can still work toward common objectives. We were also reminded that coding varies by data partners. Coding schemes that are used vary, and it's really important to understand those differences. And again, to keep those data partners and the people who truly understand those differences best at the table for ongoing dialogue. And finally, we concluded at the end that all of the analytical imperatives that had been given to us could be met using this distributed approach. So, as with any development process, we began with a good old straw man of a common data model that really required what we thought would be minimal transformation so that we'd maintain the granularity of the source data and also leverage this prior experience. We spent a fair bit of time reviewing and talking to data partners about their experiences with other common data models and wanted to make sure that we put that experience to good use. With each iteration of the common data model, we engaged the data partners in a discussion about that data model that we had shared with them. And questions like, can you implement this? Are they specific enough? Are we specific enough in our direction to you so that you can transform source data in a common way? What are we missing? And are these requirements consistent with what you expect? And, of course, this is a partnership, and so this process actively engaged and involved FDA along the way as well. Version 1 of the common data model, as Rich said, rests on administrative and claims data and has 5 major data areas. There's an enrollment table. We include information about demographics, outpatient pharmacy dispensing, utilization, and mortality. Now, although all of these data partners had some experience with common data models, the work of transforming this initial transformation was really a major undertaking for everyone. Each data partner translated its local source data to this common structure, and in the process documented exactly how they had done that. So data element by data element, table by table, telling us how source data were transformed into this common data model. As with everything that I've talked about today, the work took place through a series of weekly conference calls, countless email exchanges, and many, many, many one-on-one conversations. Then the transformed data were characterized using some standard programs that the Operations Center had developed. Now, I want to reiterate that at all times, these data remain behind institutional firewalls. So we use this distributed approach that's already been described to gather information and to characterize these data. Overall, the Mini Sentinel distributed database spans from 2000 to 2010. Different data partners have data going back to, you know, different beginning dates. Collectively, there are more than nearly 120 million records in the enrollment table, the vast majority of which have both medical and drug coverage. There are more than 70 million unique members included in the enrollment tables, and of those, about 22 million were current as of January 2009 with both medical and drug coverage. This amounts to about 170 million person years of observation time, with an average per person observation time of about 28 months. Slightly more than 50% of the enrollees are female, and about two-thirds are between the ages of 20 and 65. That's about 45 million people. So for reference, the youngest group here, from 0 to 52 weeks, for example, those are about 230,000 people, and the very oldest group, the 85-plus group, has about 3 million enrollees there. The Operations Center has done a tremendous amount of work over the last year building the core infrastructure that supports this distributed system. I mentioned the standard programs that had been developed to characterize the data. A library of programs also exists to check the quality of the data that are being created or that have been transformed. We also undertook a formal assessment of the data partners' technical environments, which really expanded beyond just technical issues to really try to identify barriers, opportunities, and even non-technical issues that might come into play. With the first transformation complete, preparation is underway now for the beginning of quarterly refresh cycles to the mini-Sentinel distributed database, and along with that, an empirical assessment of data latency. And as Rich mentioned, the secure web portal for distributed analyses is a huge accomplishment. So to return to this picture one more time, just to sort of reiterate how the pieces fit together and what the data core has done and what the data partners have done. Local data have been transformed into, or source data have been transformed into these local data sets that you see described here. The infrastructure is in place now to begin the querying of these data. And we've also developed, I believe really importantly, an approach to not only field the kinds of queries that will be necessary for a full-blown surveillance program like the one that Bruce Fireman will be talking about later this morning, but also to respond to the kind of rapid questions, rapid queries that come up as questions arise. To do this, Jeff and his group have created really a library that will continue to evolve of modular programs that can answer sort of specific and common feasibility type questions. I've listed them here, and you'll see that they really will be quite useful for those kind of quick questions that arise. So the first looks at drug exposures for a specific period. How many exposures were there over this time period to a given drug? The second expands that a little bit, or actually narrows that a little bit, by saying, tell us about drug exposures among enrollees with a specific condition. The third begins to put together exposures with outcomes in a very simple way, summarizing those results across the partners. And then the fourth explores and summarizes concomitant exposure to multiple drugs. We're very excited about the progress that's been made, but certainly understand that a lot of work lies ahead. And thanks again for the opportunity to share with you what we've done.
Well, good morning. It's really a pleasure to be here. I'm Kristen Rosati from the law firm of Coppersmith, Shermer, and Rockelman in Phoenix. And it's really been a pleasure being involved in this project. I do a lot of work across the country in using electronic health information for research and public health and other purposes that aren't directly related to the treatment of patients. And this is by far one of the most exciting projects I see happening across the country because there's a real chance and a likelihood that there'll be real impact on the health of Americans. So the FDA and the mini-Sentinel folks are building this incredible public resource using electronic health information. And one of the really important things that I've seen is that the FDA and the mini-Sentinel project personnel are incredibly committed to the privacy of that health information. And I think this is essential to build public trust in what the FDA is building here. I think the public really supports the use of health information as long as it's kept in a secure, private way for purposes such as research and public health activities that will increase the health of the public. So I've been very pleased to see the real sincere commitment to privacy in the project team. As you'll see, and as you've already seen, the architecture of the mini-Sentinel project itself really is committed to privacy because it's a distributed data network. It, as I'll talk about, complies with federal law, and more importantly, it goes beyond legal compliance. And the mini-Sentinel project team has adopted policies that reflect what are called fair information practices, which is really the bedrock of a lot of federal and state laws and good privacy practices about how to use health information. I've had the pleasure of working with two incredibly smart people on the privacy panel for the Mini-Sentinel effort. One is Devin McGraw, who's the director of the Health Privacy Project of the Center for Democracy and Technology. I know Devin's here. Raise your hand. We have to point you out. Devin's really a committed advocate for consumer interests, not just the interest in patient privacy, which, of course, is essential to what we're doing here, but also consumer interests in building these resources so that we can leverage these wonderful electronic health information resources we're building across the United States. And also Barbara Evans, who's an associate professor at the University of Houston, who has really brought an important perspective to the privacy panel. And we've been working together on evaluating the legal compliance for the Mini-Sentinel network and also helping build the privacy policies to reflect those fair information practices. Now, you've seen this before, obviously. If there's one thing you're going to get out of today's conference, it's you will understand that the Mini-Sentinel is a distributed network. And that's really the key to great privacy protection, because the individually identifiable information, which is really what consumers and patients are concerned about protecting, stays behind the firewalls of the data partners. And so a distributed data network used for analysis, whether it's for these public health activities or for research, perhaps in the future, really protects individual patient privacy because the data source holds on to that individually identifiable data. So they maintain the physical and operational control over that source data. They put it into that common data model so that you can do good analysis over many different points of data sources. The operations center or the FDA sends standardized queries into the data partners. The data partners scan it against their data. I can tell I'm not a bioinformatician, but I'm perhaps talking in a way that the consumers can understand. And then the data partners execute those queries against their data and then share summary results back to the operations center. Occasionally, the summary results aren't sufficient to do the analysis, so the data partners may occasionally be asked to provide patient-level data to the operations center to do a good discrete analysis of a particular drug safety event. But the data partners strip all of the individually identifiable information out of that patient-level data before sending it to the operations center or the FDA. So that's really key to continuing to protect patient information even when that patient-level data may be necessary to do a more particular analysis. Now, occasionally the data partners who are doing the analysis with their common data model may not have the original source data. Health plans, for instance, are working from their health claims databases, and occasionally it may be necessary to ask for a patient medical record from the original source data to confirm a drug safety signal. For instance, to evaluate when a particular drug was prescribed or administered to an individual, whether there's any other clinical indications for that patient that would count against that drug causing the actual problem. In those circumstances, the data partners may ask for individual information from the data sources, but the important thing there is they only ask for what they need. That's called a minimum necessary standard under HIPAA, and they only use that information for analyzing the drug safety event, and that data is never used for any other purpose. So the policies that have been adopted for Mini-Sentinel, even when individual information is required to do the analysis, are very respectful of the patient privacy. From a legal compliance perspective, HIPAA is the primary source of law we look at when analyzing the use of protected health information. And HIPAA permits the use and disclosure of health information, even individually identifiable information, for public health activities and to a public health authority. FDA itself, obviously, is a public health authority, but public health authorities can also include others that are contracted with the FDA to do an analysis for the FDA. So the Operations Center for Mini-Sentinel, as well as the subcontractors that contract with the Operations Center, are all treated as public health authorities for HIPAA compliance purposes. As Rich had mentioned, these activities are public health activities, public health practice, and not research. So the approval by an institutional review board is not necessary, which is important for making sure that this analysis is a streamlined process when you're thinking about all the different data sources that we'll need to touch as Sentinel gets off the ground and develops further. Now, there are a couple of other sources of law that data sources always have to think about when participating in either public health activities or research. One of them is what are called the PERT 2 regulations, which are the Federal Substance Abuse Treatment Regulations. It's unlikely that these will be affected by Sentinel, because that set of regulations just protects information that identifies someone as a substance abuser. And because only data is presented in summary format that is not individually identifiable, it's very unlikely that those regulations will be triggered. State confidentiality laws also play a part. There's a plethora of laws out there that data sources have to deal with. So each one will have to analyze their own state laws to make sure that there's no additional barriers to participating in the Sentinel initiative in Mini-Sentinel. Things like genetic testing laws, mental health laws, communicable disease and HIV protection laws. But most state laws, this is just a general statement, but permit disclosure of health information for public health activities. Most state legislatures realize that there's very important public purposes in addition to protection of patient privacy. So in large part, state laws will not be a barrier to others or to the data sources participating in Sentinel either. But going beyond legal compliance, I had mentioned that Sentinel and the Mini-Sentinel Project has adopted policies that reflect fair information practices, which go beyond what the basic baseline is required by HIPAA, for instance. Things like ensuring data integrity and quality, collection and use limitation. So data is only collected for a particular purpose, and only that amount of information necessary for the purpose is collected. And then consumer participation, openness and transparency. The FDA has been fabulous at making this process very transparent to the public and to consumers and to involving them in the decisions about how health information is appropriately used. Security safeguards and controls and accountability and oversight are essential. Now, here's just a kind of a quick recap of what those Mini-Sentinel privacy policies reflect. The keys here are that consumers and patients are not identified in any information sent to the Operations Center or the FDA. So, again, the individually identifiable information stays at the data source. Second, any information collected for Sentinel purposes, whether it's identifiable or not, is only used for Sentinel purposes. So it's that collection and use limitation principle that is so essential to fair information practices. And finally, the information is secure. Those are really the bedrock principles that are reflected throughout the policies for the Mini-Sentinel Project. So as a privacy attorney, looking at how this has been structured, I think the public should be absolutely assured that the FDA and the Mini-Sentinel contractors are committed to making sure that the system is structured and the policies are pursued in a way that really respects individual privacy and really makes respectful use of the health information that is so important to make this project work. Now, thank you very much. Look forward to your questions in a moment.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is going to be an overview of our plans for surveillance of acute myocardial infarction in users of anti-diabetes drugs. These plans have come out of a very collaborative and deliberative process that's had lots of input from a large number of researchers at the data partners, at academic institutions, at FDA. And it's been an enjoyable process, but a careful and deliberative one. The write-up of our protocol and our deliberations is available on the website that Rich mentioned, and I invite you all to get more than this overview, more details there. The write-up, it was led by Joe Selby, a diabetes researcher at Kaiser Permanente. Our aims are to develop and assess a framework and infrastructure for monitoring drug safety in large populations using, as you've heard over and over again, distributed databases. And for this pilot effort, We're going to be monitoring acute myocardial infarction in users of anti-diabetes drugs. And more specifically, we're examining the association of heart attack risk with saxagliptin, a recently approved DPP-4 inhibitor used for treatment of diabetes. And as Rachel mentioned earlier, a big advantage of looking at heart attack risk in saxagliptin users is that there's going to be a randomized trial, and as we're of CVD risk in saxagliptin users. And so as we're developing and testing and evaluating our methods and our data and our infrastructure, hopefully we'll have results from this trial to compare with. We have a big population with type 2 diabetes that we're going to be examining. We're focusing on adults who have had a diabetes diagnosis and an oral anti-diabetes drug during a 12-month baseline period. That's who we're going to be doing surveillance on to see whether they meet our entry criteria. They have to have been members for 12 continuous months in a health plan associated with one of our data partners. There's going to be very few exclusions from our study population. This is a broad population-based study. We will be excluding patients with type 1 diabetes and excluding patients under 18 and patients who've been taking only insulin because they're likely to have type 1 diabetes. And we're also excluding people who've had a recent heart attack within 30 days of starting one of our study drugs. Because their risk of adverse event is extremely high and very hard to quantify and adjust for as we're making comparisons across our study drugs. The study period we'll be doing active surveillance on goes from July in 2009 when saxagliptin was licensed through June of 2013. We'll be looking at baseline data going back further, though. For adjusting our comparisons, we'll be going back a few years, and all of our data partners, as you saw earlier, have data that permit that. In our study population now are 1.3 million patients with type 2 diabetes, and over this study period, we'll be accumulating 5.2 million person years that we're going to be monitoring for AMI. And given our baseline rate of about 9 heart attacks per 1,000 person years of follow-up, we expect about 47,000 heart attacks in this study period during this period of active surveillance. So we're going to focus on a comparison of new users of saxagliptin with new users of 4 comparator drugs. And these are the comparators, sitagliptin, pioglitazone, sulfonylurea, and long-acting insulin. Follow-up is going to begin at the first prescription for one of these study drugs and end when the user quits or switches drugs or leaves the health plan. This new user cohort design has a lot of strengths because the baseline period and starting follow-up at new use permits the comparisons to be balanced and adjusted for possible differences between the users of the different study drugs with respect to possible confounders. But restricting to the new users means that we're not going to be making inference on the drug heart attack association either from prevalent users of these study drugs or from within-person on-off changes. People go on and off and switch drugs. We will be investigating some of these methods in other settings, but not in this in these plans that I'm discussing here. And that's because we feel we can address possible biases from unmeasured confounders and from measured confounders better with the new user design. Our primary outcome, as I mentioned, is heart attack. It's a good place for us to be starting because this is a very important event that's of great interest to the public and is well identified in our databases with numerous studies at Kaiser Permanente and elsewhere have shown very high positive predictive value for heart attacks identified by these means in these databases. Our secondary outcome is the broader classification of acute coronary syndrome. I want to mention that we have two main measures of our outcome, which we'll be following over time, and by time I mean time on study drug, as well as calendar time, and they are the relative risk and the risk difference that might be associated with one study drug versus the other. One's a little more tractable in many of our statistical models, and more reliably measured, the relative risk. The other is important for weighing the harms and benefits, and they're closely related. We're going to be adjusting for a number of possible confounders, including prior cardiovascular disease, comorbid conditions, patient demographics, other drugs that patients are using, the history of patterns of use of health services. And we're going to pay very careful attention to adjustment for differences in our practice settings and data management and possible coding differences by looking carefully at differences by site and health plan and also differences over time. That's time over on drug as well as calendar time. We're going to be considering several adjustment strategies and methods. As I mentioned before, we're going to be restricting our comparisons to new users. We're going to be stratifying carefully for prior cardiovascular disease. We're also going to be stratifying by site, and we're going to be adjusting by covariate adjustment for these other factors that I outline above. We're going to be testing and evaluating and using gaining experience with several alternative methods of adjusting for these possible confounders, and which we're adapting to this distributed data environment that you've heard a lot about today, because we're not dumping and pooling all the data together. So we're going to be looking at propensity scores and disease risk scores and weighing some of their advantages. Both of these, we've developed some methods for using them in the pooled data, there's a number of advantages and disadvantages, which I see here. Since I only have a minute, of each of these, which I could talk about later. I want to emphasize that this is sequential surveillance. It's ongoing. We're going to be looking. Our first analysis is planned in a couple of months, and that will include all of the experience in our data partners that's been accumulating since the licensure of saxagliptin. We plan 9 quarterly analyses of the accumulating data with a final analysis in June of 2013. We're going to be using sequential statistics that are adjusted for multiple looks. Each look's going to include all of the data, but we're going to be paying careful attention to the multiplicity issue. I want to say that a few remarks about the size of the relative risk that we're going to be able to detect or rule out. Assuming that we accumulate 23,000 person years in saxagliptin users and a similar amount in matched users of a comparator, and expecting about 9 heart attacks per 1,000 person years, then we're going to have about 80% power to detect a relative risk of 1.3, which is quite a bit of power. If signals don't arise, the confidence intervals that we're going to be estimating will be informative about the size of the relative risk and risk difference that can be ruled out and the amount of reassurance that's appropriate, given that we've been looking and haven't seen anything. And this surveillance is designed to be worthwhile even if saxagliptin isn't used much, because comparisons of heart attack risk in users of anti-diabetes drugs can yield worthwhile reassurance or safety signals and lessons about statistical methods and evidence about the value of Sentinel's data and infrastructure, regardless of saxagliptin uptake. And so in summary, this overview is just letting you know that Mini Sentinel has developed plans to examine heart attack risk in saxagliptin users versus users of four comparator drugs. We're going to be assessing the feasibility and value of heart attack surveillance in users of anti-diabetes drugs using the distributed databases. And we're going to be evaluating methods for monitoring drug safety in these large dynamic populations. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much for all of the presentations. I want you to hold your questions, or rather use the next few minutes to think of some really tough questions for all of the panelists. We're going to take a short break now. I'd like to try to keep it to about 10 minutes or so, so just stretch your legs and so forth. And we are going to be breaking for lunch after this panel discussion. We're going to reconvene in here with these four panelists plus our FDA leaders to discuss mini Sentinel. One other thing, for those of you who are in the overflow room, there are some additional seats in this room, and we will definitely try to make room for you if you'd rather sit over here. So see you all in about 10 minutes.